And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have with us tonight. Already a lot of people out there for this very special report tonight about Person X steganography and the great censorship that we're seeing, which is completely off the charts. So many things to go over with you tonight. I'm going to try to get in a nice, tight report here, about an hour. And we won't take questions tonight because we don't have the lovely Olivia with us, but we do have Groovy Bean out there running the show in the chat. Of course, the ideas room, I'll be watching over there very closely, and it's great to see some familiar faces out there. So a lot of the things that we've been seeing this week is represents a kind of consolidation of a plan that's been ongoing pretty much since the day that Trump got into office, but certainly far beyond that. But I'm going to speak to some of these very modern aspects of deep state interruptions in our political culture. And I'm also going to get into what we have tonight. There's a lot of breaking news around what we've seen, these just off the charts, insane censorship things that the social media companies are doing. Now they're starting to walk them back because they went so crazy, went so overboard that they actually took attention off their own op, which was the deep event of the election and the incidents on the 6th. So we're going to cover, get deep in all that. And we're going to find out how ex-steganography is playing into all this. Of course, there's some fascinating ex-steganography coming forward, as a matter of fact, directly from the president himself, which is really quite remarkable. President Trump is currently set to be president until Wednesday, January 20th, at which point, as the story goes, the Biden administration will be sworn in, and we see a number of things happening on the Trump side, which are quite remarkable, and we're going to get into them tonight, everything from the UFO file to the declassification of the Crossfire Hurricane documents and possible declassification of the JFK documents, along with the complete suspension of funding for the Central Intelligence Agency and support on the military side, which started a day before. It was the same day of the actual Georgia election, which was also in the middle of all this. And certainly everything that played out could have been some payback on that, because what Trump did is, and this is quite fascinating, he activated National Security Action Memorandum 57, which was left on the books by President Kennedy all the way back in 1961 as a result of the incredible overreach of the Central Intelligence Agency. And, you know, in Kennedy's case, he wound up firing the sacred cow of Alan Dulles, who was the leader of the CIA, but was really the entire leader of the whole intelligence community since the CIA started, and was officially CIA director for 53 to 61. So all of those major things that happened in the 50s and early 60s were all under Dulles. And he accomplished it all along with his brother, who was the Secretary of State. So Kennedy getting rid of them and then figuring out, how do I keep them out of the system? How do I kind of deflate their power so that my, you know, my administration and then future administrations don't have to deal with this? You know, this little small renegade bunch who have their own air force going around the world and overthrowing governments and running stock markets in different countries, and all the covert operations and, you know, the flight, the madness, the whole bit. You know, we have to figure out a way to get them back under presidential control. And so he left that National Security Action Memorandum there, and it was not activated at the time because the Joint Chiefs were frankly too afraid of the CIA in the early 60s. But they knew, it's been this kind of ongoing thing, and I've reported it in my research, of course, around Kennedy, which is everyone knows that that National Security Action Memorandum series really is there. And it starts with 55, but 57 is the one that really defangs the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, whenever we're talking about the corruption in the media or the things we're seeing, you know, with the deep state reporting, anything that has to do with the takeover of normal channels of communication. That's all CIA. This is what they do. And a lot of the isolation that they were doing on President Trump, we'll find out from their own mouths, was what they used when they go to isolate the presidents in other countries that aren't popular with their particular agenda. Now, what's fascinating about this is we have to look at it from a few different angles, because the Central Intelligence Agency feeds the misinformation in the media. So all the things that people pick up in their reading relating to Trump and all the things that they want to move out, you know, the Central Intelligence Agency has been at war with the Trump administration from the word go. So we have to ask ourselves, whether we're on the right or the left, why that would be the case. Because they certainly weren't like that with Obama. They loved palling around with Obama because, you know, he came in there in sync with them. But Trump had his own thing that he wanted to do, and he had his own connections. And we're going to find out just how deep they go into advanced technology tonight as well. So this is part of the piece, I think, that we need to understand about all this, is this isn't what it appears to be on the surface. What we get on the surface is, you know, the battle between the neoliberals trying to get back into power and putting Biden in there, you know, kind of like an old Soviet chief that the Politburo can pull the strings behind the scene. And if he gets naughty, they just pull the plug and they put Kamala Harris in there. You know, we have some of this on the surface, and then they have the whole orange man bad routine with Trump. And, you know, I think what they want us to think is that through the media, well, Trump was bad and now we've got a good thing. You know, we're going to get back to justice and all this stuff. But of course, it all includes incredible lockdowns that they've been pushing. And that's all come from the Democratic side. So whether you're on the right or the left, again, we're seeing this over and over, that the incredible need to dominate outside the level of the Constitution is remarkable. And it gets to such a psychosis that we see the social media companies saying, we're beyond the government, we're our own government, we'll try to institute government from the social media level, and then we can get past the middleman of the Constitution, the president, the Congress, and all the rest. And that's what Jack Dorsey was up to, the CEO of Twitter. And we're going to start tonight with him because he did the most egregious censoring that we've seen up to now. And, you know, as bad as the mainstream media is cutting away when Trump was there and all the rest of it, what Twitter did is they allowed the president to develop this 90 million plus following. And then they isolated him by not giving him access to it in a crucial moment in terms of national security and everything else in our country. And they wanted to just muzzle him to see if they could put this, you know, putsch across. And, you know, they're also warning on the platforms, even the platform that I'm on right now, they say, if you say anything in relation to the election that suggests it wasn't completely legitimate, then we're going to censor those videos and then those channels. Of course, I've been saying it all along because the facts back it up, not because it's somebody's wild theory. It's because there are a number of investigations around this that have shown it. Also, you know, there's just some things related to that entire election that you have to imagine for a moment, for example, that Hope and Change Obama only got 62 million votes, but Biden got 80 million votes. That's 18 more million votes than Hope and Change Obama. I mean, Obama was, as we know, genuinely popular. So, and Biden basically didn't even show up. He hung out in his basement, as we all know, for most of the election. And then they wheeled him out for the occasional press conference. He would talk all tongue-tied, and then they drag him away. So that's not how you win an election. As a matter of fact, if that's the new paradigm for how elections are won, they never have to run anybody again. They just hang out, do a couple of Zoom meetings, you know, make a few announcements, and then you win. I mean, that's – so obviously there was something – else going on. And anyone who followed the story knows that there's tremendous amounts of anecdotes, cases that were brought, and video coverage. I mean, there's a lot to suggest that, you know, you don't see it in the case of this election. There were seven states that sent alternate electors. That's a lot. go back to 2016 and find out how many alternate electors there were. there were objections. There were cases against that election on the Clinton side trying to get it overthrown. And of course, there were tremendous, you know, they talk all about this activity around this election. I mean, during the last election, there were all kinds of Antifa uprisings and everything else, and demonstrations against it, and, you know, saying that Trump was going to be Hitler going in, so anything would be better than this, and the Democrats themselves saying he's not my president and all that. So the idea to suggest that political tension is anything new and requires a domestic terrorism bill, the way that they're trying to put it, just misses that history because it's convenient. You know, as recently as last summer, Antifa connected with other groups, and they, you know, turned Washington, D.C. into a gigantic fire pit. And they burnt cities, and we all know the story. And the Black Lives Matter group did that as well. And again, you know, we see that genuine, we have to always remember the piggyback. And this is what we get from Professor Peter Del Scott, which is there's always the operation itself and then what piggybacks on top of it. So you get something like the incident that happened over the summer with law enforcement. And then you get this story, this narrative out, and then you, you know, fund all these groups to go in there and do it. The only problem with the official stories on these things is that, you know, regular protesters don't carry, you know, military standard flares and things like that. So the picture starts to fall apart pretty quickly. And the presence of military contractors and agent provocateurs are there. And we've gone through a number of them. But we've studied from the perspective of history on this. And when we've looked at cases like the Kennedy assassination to 9/11, to all these different things, there's always somebody who's a designated patsy, right? And there's always the strange people who are out of place, who just shouldn't be there. And one of those people that shouldn't be there is this leftist activist, John Sullivan, who was a BLM operator. But he was right in the middle of all that mayhem from January 6th. So now the FBI has him in custody as somebody who's like a ringleader of a lot of the activity there. So, you know, we have to kind of get a handle on this from the point of view of reality. It's not people saying, you know, this group did it or that group did it. It's more like who's there who shouldn't be there. And if BLM and Antifa are in the middle of this, then it, chances are they're sabotaging a legitimate protest and making it into something that it's not. And along with some other people. So that's, you know, that's how you do a deep event. And then after the deep event, and you do other things like you stand down at security strip, just like the Secret Service was taken off the back of Kennedy's limousine. These are fingerprints of deep events. And what happens is generally a group inside the deep state moves into the public state to get a policy change going. And then they move back out, and we're left with all these strange questions like, who are these strange people? And this official narrative, which, you know, completely collapses. Now, I've described dark journalism before, and I'm going to do this real briefly. There's the official story on top, you know, in the Kennedy assassination, crazy leftist commie happened to get lucky by getting a job 6 weeks before the presidential motorcade route went down and, you know, got incredibly lucky shooting all these shots. Then the counter story was he had CIA connections. He was involved with the FBI. They were using him for different operations. He worked for a right winger the previous summer. You know, so professors, writers, researchers go into that, and that's this kind of counter story to this official lie. And then the media says, oh, no, that's a conspiracy theory. Okay, so that's the second level. And the third level is the junk conspiracy, you know. So they say, oh, no, it was the Soviets that did it. And he was a Soviet agent, right? You get the junk conspiracy on top. So you get three different levels of stories. And what happens very often is that third level is so crazy, you know, it'll be over the top. They'll connect it with something just so out there that people will go back to the official story. So that just encompasses a general trend for how we look at stories. That's dark journalism. And it's easy to see in this story, there's a lot of that as well. So let's start off, though, with our good friend, Mr. Censorship, Jack Dorsey. Some really funny things here, too. Okay, so they ban, as I said earlier, Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, bans President Trump. And he, you know, has this kind of complete block on all of his activities. And if you try to retweet his stuff, they were already doing and infringing on him when he would write certain things. They would say, this statement isn't true. Are you sure you want to retweet it? And all this kind of nonsense, you know, like that's real thought control. So what they're doing in the middle of this, they're willing to risk the kind of, you know, we're going to risk everything to see if this is the moment where we move against it and we're in charge and we get, you know, it's like a putsch, really it is. And, but what happened instead this time is very interesting because they had two ops at once. So they had the ops around the events of the 6th, and then they had the op to throw Trump off of Twitter, to suspend the president's communication. Remember, it's the president of the United States. So if there were a nuclear incident, for example, that were to threaten the entire country, you've just disconnected the president from 90 million people. So it's an incredible offense. I can't tell you how like egregious an offense it is for Twitter to do that. And they should be sanctioned for it dramatically, I think. Legally, in other words, I think it's being looked at, a lot of people are looking at this way. So what happened was Dorsey, after he did this, he realized, oh, you know, I was doing what my masters told me to do, but I'm taking a lot of heat now. So he came out and he said, Trump's Twitter decision ban was right decision, but he worries about the precedent. That is precedent, not president. So he worries about the precedent that he set, silencing the president, but he says it's right. So, you know, let's think about that for a minute. That's kind of like somebody who's like an abuser, you know, like a wife abuser. And he's like, you know, it's really, I broke your arm there, but I'm starting to really wonder if that's the best way to do things. You know, it's so crazy. And these people, if you read his long, meandering, ridiculous defense of this, you know, absurd action of nullifying free speech from the president, it's incredible. And I've never seen anything like it. But for me, you know, what the biggest problem is that their actual brand is predicated on the idea of free speech. So when we look at this and we see them making these types of acts, we can see that somebody in there, in that whole social media structure and Amazon and the whole bit, they made some really big mistakes in the last week and they undercut their own op and the whole fake impeachment and all this stuff. So this was a real setup, but they wound up stepping in it, and I'm going to show you how this works. So he's trying to back it off a little bit, but then luckily there's a guy, Project Veritas, out there, and he, you know, has this great reputation for getting stuff behind the scenes. And so in this case, a whistleblower inside Twitter secretly filmed what Dorsey was actually thinking, and that video is out there now, and he's saying, oh, this is way beyond Trump. We're going to really go for basically any kind of free thought that we don't agree with. And so he warns Twitter crackdown will be much bigger than Trump in this leaked video. And I recommend everyone watch that, which takes the mask off and shows what they're really up to. And again, you know, very robotically and somewhat psychotically speaking the lines. Now, we know a lot of weird things about Dorsey. There's weird personal things there about taking ice baths and stuff. And the reason I note that, everyone has their own peculiarities, but I think that we're looking at somebody who is disturbed, and that the reason that they use these people and put them at the top of these organizations is because they can engineer them because they know their particular mental psychosis and they're able to trigger it at will. So that's more that the censorship is not going to go away anytime soon. So he's not worried about the precedent, and what he's trying to do is create the norm that free speech doesn't exist. Now, he's not alone, as we'll find out tonight. Of course, Facebook has joined that party, and they own Instagram. There's a whole line of these people. Now, I've described this connection with things. As when these people go to this yearly meeting with the World Economic Foundation or the Davos crowd, you know, what we're looking at when they do this is they have to go there and say, you know, these people sit them down and say, what have you done for us? The quote unquote controllers, the dollar syndicate. And if they say, you know, like they did in 2016, well, Trump got through and somehow we weren't able to stop it, or Trump didn't get impeached, we weren't able to pull it hard enough, these people pull them aside and they have the talk, you know, telling them if you don't nail this down, you won't get this particular treat. And, you know, maybe bad things will happen and maybe we'll do a Charlie Rose on you and just get rid of you, give you a sex scandal, get you out of here. So they're vying for their lives. You ever notice that on CNN when you really look at these people? They look terrified. They do. I mean, I've been around professional news people before. They don't look anything like these people. And so for me, it's really a dead giveaway. They look like they're under weird pressure and that if they don't deliver, they're out. And I mean, all the way out. And that's Council on Foreign Relations out. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. We're going to be diving into Person X steganography. I wonder if you can guess who Person X is, self-identified. I'm going to show you here shortly. I want to remind you while we're getting into this to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for the newsletter that keeps us in touch while they're doing this incredibly insane. And I mean insane. For these people to reveal themselves as so fascist and so repressive, to not allow a normal conversation back and forth between you and I about an election that just took place that involved 150 million people is insane. It is the very height of authoritarianism. And they're learning. They're learning. They're getting sucker punched by their own activities, and they realize this was not the hour to do this. And so they, like I said, they stepped in it. But so make sure you go to Dark Journalist, sign up for that newsletter. That'll keep us with a pipeline for each other. And the only thing that's going to happen there is about once a week on Fridays, we're going to send you a newsletter letting you know the incredible interviews and guests and the different X shows that we have coming up for you, including the X 100 show, which is coming up if the world would just temper down enough to let us do it. That's a 3-part episode that I'm looking very much forward to bringing you. It's great to have everyone here in the ideas room. And I know we have Groovy Bean out there running the show. So what we're going to do is we're going to move now. I just want to, before we move Pat Dorsey, I thought this was a very interesting thing that came up. Of course, the Ugandan elections are going on. And one of the things that they did, they were smart. They were like, aha, we see what happened in America. We're going to make sure that there's no social media going on at all. So they shut off access to social media. And I love the statement from Dorsey on behalf of Twitter to them. Ahead of the Ugandan election, we're hearing reports that internet service providers are being ordered to block social media and messaging apps. We strongly condemn internet shutdowns. You just shut down the president with 90 million different viewers. They are hugely harmful. Well, how much harm did you do then, eliminating 70,000 accounts in 72 hours? Violate basic human rights. Then what did you do in getting rid of hundreds of millions of people? And the president of the United States, who, by the way, is the commander-in-chief in case there's a national security emergency, and the principles of open internet. Dorsey, you wouldn't know or open internet if it hit you in the face. You're a fascist and you go from the fascist team, just like the World Economic Foundation, just like the president of Google, and just like our good friend Zuckerberg over at Facebook. You've grown up in this culture to think that you're some kind of a big shot because they've temporarily allowed you to man the software that controls social media, but they can replace you in a heartbeat. And if you have stumbled here, and if you, you know, if it looks bad to the public, if you're taking action away from their main op, you might be deposed there as the leader of Twitter. So you don't know anything about open internet. And if I were you, I would take the money and run, because I think you're just going to get more and more pushback. And I think the kind of press that you're going to get, because the media, you know, the thing is, the media will defend people as they're instructed to, but there's a certain point where that deep state media control, you know, they're willing to throw this morsel to the crowd. And that's what you're going to see. But I think it's an incredible disgrace, just as a free speech moment in America, for them to have shut down the president. Now, one of the things that I pointed out in October during the election is when they silenced the New York Post, which had a story about Hunter Biden's laptop, which, by the way, you're not supposed to talk about, but it's an incredibly powerful piece of information that the FBI have. And there's a case associated with it. So any good journalist is going to do that, regardless of what any dumb social media platform. They're just there to sit there and collect their money, you know. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, the idea of them as the arbiter of free speech is pathetic, you know, because they're not very advanced people to start with. And they've shown themselves to be incredibly tyrannical and draconian in terms of locking down free speech. And, you know, that's just the beginning for them. They think that they've really accomplished something here. I do feel like we have a crossfire, though, that's going on, which is between what they were trying to do with the deep event on the 6th and then the incredible isolation of the president, getting him off Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter all at once. It was too much. And then they threw Ron Paul off Facebook. And then people were like, oh. And then this person and that person were blocked. And suddenly it was happening on the left and on the right and in the center and in the middle. And the only thing left were these little weird neoliberals who are showing themselves to be more and more psychotic and in line with this. So they actually failed there because they were pushing this whole deep, dark, you know, let's have Nancy Pelosi cry about, you know, how America's being taken over by, you know, a few Trump supporters. You know, this is very interesting, of course, because Pelosi and that whole gang were cheering their heads off during the Antifa riots and them trying to burn down different cities and all the rest. So it's incredibly hypocritical. And if Twitter were trying to cause something good in society, they would have suspended all those accounts. So obviously, this is just part of a program that is being laid down. And we have to pay very close attention to who's laying it down and what the purpose is. You know, why are they doing it? And I always say that regardless of what side of the political fence that you're on, does not matter. It does not matter. Why are they doing the things that they're doing? Like, why all those lockdowns? Why the incredible draconian policies around the, you know, the whole COVID situation? Why the false numbers? Why the incredible control? Obviously, there's a centralization process going on, and the squeeze is on. And so what they're going to try to pretend now is when they've squeezed Biden through, if they get through on this program, then, you know, they're going to have him and they're going to pretend that they're coming in and like, oh, things are going to be happy and gay again. And I did find something interesting on that, which is that some of these cities now, as soon as they have been convinced that Biden will get in, Chicago Mayor Lightfoot, who really, her reputation follows her, calls to reopen restaurants to mitigate risk of underground parties, right? So obviously, forget about the underground parties part. What's going on there is they need to open back up, just like they needed to open back up before, just like when Trump said, open the economy back up. And then we now have Governor Cuomo, who was the biggest hawk of the bunch, along with Newsom and Gretchen Whitmer. And Cuomo's saying, hey, we got to open restaurants back up. You know, it's because they know that they can return to normal on some level because they've accomplished a big, significant piece of the operation. And so it shows all the incredible hypocrisy for the position that they were taking earlier. But, you know, all that's forgotten because, after all, Governor Cuomo won an Emmy. And I kid you not, I know that sounds funny, but he really did. Okay. Let's get into Person X. Now, there's a lot of reasons why this is significant because, of course, if you follow this show, you know a lot about ex-steganography and Trump. But Trump to self-identify as Person X, this is very significant, actually, for the kind of work that we look into. So this is from Bloomberg, and it was all over the mainstream media as well. Trump wanted Person X parlor handle in October. I'll tell you, there's no reason that somebody with the name President Donald Trump would want Person X. So he wanted to put this across. The X steganography, the messaging that goes on with X steganography relates directly to the power system around advanced technology. So I think that one of the things that the president was doing was positioning himself and saying, you know, I can declare things and I'm the bull in the china shop. And it explains the insane rapidity of this election cycle better than anything else, because this is like a fight to the death for these people. It's almost as if Trump had got back in, then they would have felt that their futures were over. And there's a lot of things that we need to get on board with in terms of how we're going to look at things for the future, including talking directly about Chinese money and its influence on this country and this political system. But the thing that Trump had done is he had busted that level of control with the Chinese money flow, which had really been flowing strongly since Charlie Tree and the Clintons in the 90s, when the Clintons were paid off to let the China into the WTO, even though China was one of the greatest human rights offenders in history. So it wouldn't have happened without that type. You know, nobody expected it to happen. If you go back, they were like, you know, it'll take 10 years for China to clean up their act. Boom. Right in the mid 90s, they got it through, and that was all Clinton. And Clinton squeezed the money from that. And Charlie Tree and others went to prison, who were the Chinese money middlemen for the Clintons. But the Clintons, of course, didn't go to prison. But it always hung out there, the Chinese money scandal with the Clintons. And, you know, of course, the Republicans have their own issues with that. And Chinese money is just all over the place. But the question is, now it's hardening, it's crystallizing to actual control. And what they want is a kind of social credit system here. So Trump represented and represents a block against this activity, which is the complete transhumanist Chinese money worldwide dictatorship takeover. So now Trump had his own issues, but one of the things that he didn't go for was, you know, he was part of that group, which is the Fortress America group and the America First. And that is, they have their own kind of deep state. But the National Association of Manufacturers that comes out of the 40s and 50s, the America First movement, is something that says we're not going to mess with empire. We're going to concentrate on Fortress America and guard ourselves on in our two shores. So, you know, it was kind of the bring the money and the manufacturing home. And a lot of this was done actually under the Trump administration when he wasn't fighting off impeachment and when he wasn't fighting off the Russian spy collusion and all that nonsense, which, by the way, to his credit, he ordered those documents released, and the Crossfire Hurricane documents, which would go to the ceiling, are going to be released in full, and some of them are already getting released, and I've been getting updates on that. I think we're going to see some incredible updates when we get into this. We're going to learn that that entire thing came out of the CIA on behalf of the DNC because they did not want Trump to be the president, and that's where this all came from. It was their big gamble, and now it's exposed, but it wasn't exposed during Trump's presidency. And that's a big thing, because it would have shown the amount, you know, that all these media narratives and all the stuff that they wasted people's time with, and they spent $50 million in the Mueller investigation. That's our money. We paid for Mueller to investigate Trump for being a Russian agent, $50 million. So, you know, we have to be real about what these things are about, and it'll give us kind of a better heads up on it. Trump coming in and saying, register me as Person X on Parler. It's another identification of Trump, undeniable, with the X steganography. And whenever we get around Trump, there's always these levels, these threads that lead us to the advanced technology card, whether it's through his uncle, John Trump, Uncle John, and his connection with Tesla and Tesla's papers, and Vannevar Bush, who was the head of what? The UFO file. I mean, he's also the head of the science development under Roosevelt and Truman, but we know from testimony of physicist Robert Sarbacher and others that Vannevar Bush was the one who was in charge of the UFO file, and John Trump was his protege when Vannevar Bush was president of MIT, just a few minutes from here. So when we start to see those connections, and then we start to see things like the Space Force and the UFO file come into this fight, then the whole thing starts to take on a different character, and we start to see, aha, now we see what it's all about. You know, now we see the fear of God in their eyes is because they're looking at Trump and saying he knows about that extra secret technology. That's the stuff we keep out of the presidential purview. So the question is, going on the regular narrative, if Trump were to leave the presidency on January 20th, that leaves about 5 days and to declassify everything. Now, one of the things he's shown that he will declassify is the Crossfire Hurricane. He already ordered it. There's an executive order for all those documents to come out. Some of them already have, some of them today, and I was just looking into them, but I think we're going to get more by Monday. October 2021, the CIA's JFK records are scheduled to be released. However, with a Biden administration, it won't happen. So Trump can pull the trigger on the October 21st date on that and bring it to say, no, you know, release them now. And that would be a huge thing considering the push that the CIA has given him and the tremendous pushback that he's had to deal with on this, which is remarkable. And no president since Kennedy has gone through it. That much we can agree on, I think, on any part of the spectrum. So if you're a libertarian, if you're a hardcore Democrat, if you're a Bernie Democrat, if you're a Green Party person, it's very obvious to see when the CIA acts against the White House. Professor Scott has a series of books about the first deep state action against the White House, which starts with the Kennedy administration. So if you go through those various presidents and we're looking, you know, the Biden presidency has something that looks something like the Johnson presidency would look. It's like a corrupt presidency in the background pulling the strings while you have this kind of figure who's corrupt in the front and who is already legally compromised. That's the kind of impression that I get. The only thing that I would say is when you go through those various presidencies, that's what you need to do to understand the structure that we're in now and why you have this, you know, the deep event of the Capitol thing along with the election and all the irregularities and all the rest. So Trump in the middle of all that saying, I'm person X, is a great identifier for the X-steganography. What have we learned about X-steganography? It relates directly to the UFO file. And it relates to it in such a way that it comes back around in his personal history through his uncle, but also through his very tight relationship with President Nixon, which is something we brought out on this program in 2018. Nobody really knew anything about it. And when we presented it, there were official channels that, you know, questioned it and said, you know, we don't know, there's no proof. In September, all these letters of their exchange are released by the Nixon administration at the Nixon Library. And this is kind of fascinating. There are all those letters that show that deep relationship. How long did the relationship go on? Over a decade. So the only reason that I was able to find it really was that the things that I was looking for involved points where Trump would have identified himself with particular political movements. And when I found him taking pictures with Nixon, it made me curious. And then we found letters that Nixon had sent to him telling him to run for president and he'd win. Now, this is all remarkable stuff. And then the fact that, you know, it wasn't widely reported, but Trump had that picture on his wall in the Oval Office the whole time he's been in there. So there's obviously something very important about that relationship. And the letters, which have a really wide range, and, you know, these people aren't going to talk about hidden technology in these types of letters, but it is all there, this kind of comfortable back and forth. And we know that Nixon, of course, is the other president that I think was the most informed on a UFO file who actually wanted to do something about it and actually wanted to get that type of information out, sort of like a 1970s disclosure version. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. It's great to have everyone here in the ideas room. It's great to see Groovy out there running the show. And if we have Gigi Young here, which is fantastic. Gigi's been doing great videos lately on this whole process, but taking it to a point where what do we do personally during this very chaotic time that they've laid out? So we need to really tune into those channels like Gigi, like Catherine Fitz, and all of the incredible people that we've put forward on this show to really get a handle on what's happening. Millie Weaver has done incredible things, been right in the heart of all these election activities, and of course was there during the whole Trump speech on January 6th and the whole everything that happened after. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep into the incredible suppression of thought going on social media networks. Of course, you can go to darkjournalist.com to sign up for our newsletter, and that keeps us really in touch. One of the things that I think is important is that, you know, if they do start making good on some of their social media threats in terms of this channel, then it'll be really good if you guys are already tied over on the newsletter, because then we have that incredible back and forth. That's a free newsletter, and there's not a lot of marketing that goes along with it. It just makes sure that you get the information and the incredible guests and people that we have coming up on this show. Okay, now tonight, part of the turnaround. President Trump's Facebook and Instagram pages have been magically restored. Unclear if he can post again. That just came out before we went live tonight. So they're reading the handwriting on the wall. They're off to silence the president and other accounts and us, which is even more important. You know, and us, I mean, you and I and social media and anyone who has an idea different than the establishment. So here's what we had. We had the deep event. We had them going for it and trying to really isolate the president, shutting him off from Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, really trying to muffle him. You know, if he went out to make a statement, the media wouldn't cover it. He had to make these videos and then hope his followers would share them. And then they did things, of course, against Trump business. They suspended him on Stripe and all this other stuff so that people couldn't donate to him. That's what you do in a fascist country when you're trying to eliminate an enemy. And I can, you know, go through whether it's Venezuela or Guatemala, a number of different situations where that's exactly the playbook that they followed. What's interesting is someone from Homeland Security came out on CNN and said, actually laid it out. I was actually completely blown away. And they were a former Homeland Security. And now they like advise CNN on national security matters. And they were like, you know, what we would do, and we're treating Trump, we're treating him just like we would if he was an enemy, you know, like a dictator enemy. The first thing you do is isolate him and try to make him look small in front of his followers. And she was going off like this. And the two people were like sitting there with their mouths open. Because what happens in fascism is you get giddy on your own power drive. And we've seen that this is what happens, especially in the media. And, you know, in those countries where human rights are suspended and free speech is suspended, you know, what you get is the people who are part of that start to get really jazzed about it. And I think the Prime Minister of New Zealand, when she was talking about how they put people in these detention centers if they didn't take, you know, their COVID vaccine or whatever, like they'll take it, you know, because if they don't take it, they won't get out. Ha 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 ha. You know, and there she looked completely crazy. You know, here's this young woman leading a country as a prime minister. And she looked like Joseph Goebbels, you know. It's a thing that's in there. It's like an illness that exists inside the psychosis of fascist leadership. And it's always, we've seen it over and over again, but whenever it gets an opportunity, you know, it gets blown away when it gets exposed over and over again, whether it was Mussolini or Hitler, it always comes back up. UK police chief, now is really not the time for freedom of speech, right to assemble. Yeah, just forget about those human rights. This isn't the time for that. This is the time for us to take over, right? And in America, just forget about that Constitution. That's a pesky little document. What we need is to build back better with the UN. I don't think so. So they don't. They have the guns. There's such a Morrison song where he says they've got the guns, but we've got the numbers. And that's how it is. It's like they're a power structure, and this problem existed during the 60s because after the CIA took Kennedy out, it was hard for them to maintain with their agenda, which was incredibly unpopular because it was psychotic to just stay over there and bomb the hell out of Vietnam for 10 years. So, and a lot of people were starting to realize, oh, this is a war about drugs, or this is not really worth my child's life. And so that instinct in the 60s to research these people is where the alternative media was born. That's where this all came from. You go back to Ramparts magazine, you go back to the Garrison investigation, May Brussels. This is the foundation of all the work that we do. It's like a separate media had to grow up to address the problems that were actually happening, while the media that was, in the front, they had a pretend right-left fight going on, So Walter Cronkite was supposed to be upset about what was going on in Vietnam, but he was still part of the Council on Foreign Relations, so there wasn't any real split there. And so what happened was the alternative media opened up situations like the Kennedy assassinations, the Martin Luther King assassinations, and it started to show this hidden power structure going on. And we need to understand that what a lot of what this is all about is they understand that in the last 4 years, more than at any other time in history, this power elite structure has been exposed. And they are desperately trying to put that genie back in the bottle. The election of the Trump presidency, whatever you think of Trump, opened that up even more. So they are in a situation, a very vulnerable situation from their point of view, and they are making these moves. They want to consolidate the planet. By 2030, they want to be the only ones who own anything. They said it in their own papers. They want you to think of things in terms not of ownership, that it'll just help society and they'll own everything. And we'll just be kind of like, serfs on their plantation. And going along with this, Bill Gates, of course, Forbes has acknowledged today is the biggest owner of farmland. Well, that's very disturbing considering he also has such an incredible influence on our world through this COVID operation and satellites and all the other things that he's involved with. The idea of him in charge of the food chain is particularly disturbing because, and I have to say, I think this one Whitney Webb pointed out, and I always, when I find things, I always cite the sources because I want other people to find the great work that is out there, people like Whitney and Millie and others. GMO tomato as edible COVID vaccine. Mexican scientists to make it a reality. So now the farmland thing makes a little more sense. There you go. This is the kind of sick world that they want to get into, where you think you're having a BLT and you're getting injected with Bill Gates' weird DNA altering vaccine. They've talked a lot of people into this vaccine. If I say something against it, the incredible outpouring of people looking into this and really getting to the bottom of it, whether it's Dr. Gold from Frontline Doctors or RFK Jr., who we've had on this show, and he's going to come on again. These are the people investigating whether these things are healthy for us to take. And the corporations and the power structure just wants to rifle us through and say, we're ramping up vaccines. And of course, this is a bipartisan thing because, we've seen on both sides of that fence, they push that vaccine like no tomorrow. While many of the cures that are hanging out there, like ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, basically they're banned from discussion, even though these incredible medical experts have gone on the record. And so you have the media, which is the dumb, really dumbed down. And you'd have to be stupid to believe anything that they believe. And you have these people who are smart. They're psychologists and, you know, writers and all this other stuff. And they're like, oh, well, you know, if that was there, CNN would report it or something. So there's like a real, a lot of people need to break through that thing. They think that the New York Times is the same New York Times from 25 years ago. It's not. It's been taken over. It's a vassal. And that's why we need to kind of get to a point in the independent media where it's off of these platforms and truly independent. And what they've done with all the extensive censorship is they've really created a gigantic, wide open investment session. And a lot of people looking around saying, hey, I can make a social media network and it'll be all the rage, because there are millions, and I mean millions of people, who don't like anything about how these different, you know, they understand and they remember how these systems used to work, YouTube, Twitter, and all the rest. And they were great open platforms when they started. They got everybody hooked, and then they try to hem them in terms of what they could think, who they could vote for, and all the rest of it. And, you know, that's not a social media network. That's a system of control. Very, very different things. So so it is with the vaccine. You know, they've pushed this, but we have to remember, long before the pandemic came along, they were pushing and they were using the measles thing, which was a ridiculous argument because measles is almost never deadly. But they wanted to go in this direction. And so what we had in dealing with them, it was really a situation where we had to consider that these people were already setting up the parameters. There were already massive protests in New Jersey against getting rid of the religious exemption, in New Hampshire and all these different places for vaccines. They needed everybody to be on it. This is why we need to study exactly what they're doing with it. What is it that they want inside people's bodies that they can monitor and make part of this Internet of Things for the 2030 rollout? What is actually called in banker circles the going direct reset. The great reset is just something that the Klaus Schwabs of the world threw in to try to make this sound good. But what it is just consolidation by a very small group of a very large group. And to harvest them and their resources, and to get rid of all the pesky government things that we've developed, and the protections, you know, things like habeas corpus and stuff. I just got to get rid of that. So what happens is, when the transparency comes on, like when people have a kind of a revulsion against this free speech crackdown, then we start to see, this is, you know, humanity is still alive and well. And these people thought, this is our moment. We've shut down Trump. We've taken over the election. We've got this thing, this domestic terrorist bill now for anybody who opposes us. And that's what they're going to try to pull as soon as Biden gets into office. So, you know, this is where they're coming from. From my perspective, the biggest danger out of all the things that they're doing is the domestic terrorism bill. That's the one to watch. And we're going to do a lot of reporting on it, because they're going to try to get it passed pronto. And it's incredibly dangerous. They're using this whole PSYOP operation from the 6th to try to get it done. And that's the dangerous aspects. And I can tell you that I know a lot of the people. I've studied their activities behind the scenes of the people who put it together. And they're coming from a very, very dark place. What they're trying to do is take that war on terror. They're the same people, exact same people who set up the war on terror. As a matter of fact, remember that Biden had his own hand in writing the Patriot Act. They're trying to take that type of crackdown that they did for terrorists around the world to disrupt their communications and all the rest of it, and apply it to anyone they don't like under the umbrella of, oh, they're domestic terrorists, you know. DT, there it is. So Trump, of course, is their ultimate fall guy for that activity. But let's look a little bit at one thing that they tried to pull, which hasn't gone off so well, which was the presence of this John Sullivan character at the event. We're going to get into this one now. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep now into the censorship controversy and the Person X censorship, particularly interesting because of the X steganography wars that go on behind the scenes. and the fact that Trump was self-identifying as Person X on Parler, and that his own group there inside the White House was like, maybe we'll hold on that Person X thing, because that is kind of the final card, messaging-wise, saying, I know all about the advanced technology. I'm in charge of it. I will disclose it. It's a very dangerous situation for those people, because they think of that as their ultimate Trump card, as it were. And, you know, what goes on in that situation, excuse me, I have to grab all these different things I've put aside for you. CIA releases entire collection of UFO-related documents to truth-seeking website. The UFO operation and the CIA threat op around this is really, you know, we have to look at it in terms of that's what they're building up to. Because I've said it on this program, you know, that when you look at it, what's going on is the COVID op is really, you know, maybe one quarter of what they can do with the alien op, you know, or one tenth. Because when that thing comes along, they're going to be able to attribute all types of things to this unknown. And that goes deep on the religious side. It goes deep on the on this different, you know, angles of personal fears, the actual presence of off-world civilizations. So they want to be able to control that, and they've been building it up all along. Now, it's interesting because they love the UFO file now. And I remember the days when they hated the UFO file, because the CIA just, you know, controls the narrative on it either way. So the fact that they used to hate people knowing about it and try to spin it off and saying, oh, no, it's just, you know, our own aircraft and that kind of thing. Now they're very behind it. They want people to believe that there's a UFO threat out there. And we've seen all their different programs, like the UAP threat. This group that is studying this whole thing, the task force, and Marco Rubio from Florida, who's the senator, is on board with that, along with our friend over there at TTSA. So an interesting thing happened over at TTSA, which is that Lou quit. Now, Lou was very interesting along all these lines, because of course he was the one who came out in the New York Times article and said, I've been hanging out in the background trying to get UFO disclosure and they won't let me, so I'm a whistleblower, which was completely not true. They just sent him out there to do this. And he obviously, when the show Unidentified came in 49th in the ratings, I think they finally figured out he's not the one that we want to do this. And there was no big hand-wringing in public from DeLong either. So I think he was instructed, you can't, just don't talk about Elizondo. And Elizondo is probably going to go back into what he did originally, which was intelligence work, counterintelligence work, lying to other countries, which he's probably quite good, because he lied a lot to the public as far as the UFO file was concerned. And it's all that stuff about ATIP and all the rest. You know, of course, there was a program called ATIP, but he attributed all kinds of wild things to himself leading it, which he later backed off. And then he just became the kind of point man for this kind of disclosure. And the press was happy to cover him, and they gave him all that room to do it. But he could not pull off the final UFO threat aspect they were looking for. Now, we'll notice a couple of things that are interesting here. U.S. intelligence officials have for 180 days to release information on UFOs. Yeah, I want you to remember these headlines, because, you know, I've described this over and over again on the UFO front. They don't have 180 days to disclose all they know about UFOs. They have 180 days to communicate intra-office-wise, one agency with another. That doesn't have anything to do with the public. They can look at it and say to each other, oh, the information you have is classified for a reason, and by the way, so is yours, so we're just not going to do anything about it. This idea that somehow they've decided to let UFO disclosure out, it just isn't true. I mean, you know, I'd be happy if they were to do that. I wouldn't trust what they put out. But this thing about them having 180 days and how it's mixed into that COVID bill is just about them exchanging inside the agencies with each other. It has nothing to do with give that to the public now. It's not there. And anyone who tells you that, I've been noticing, you know, the false hope thing is really a problem on the mainstream media side and on the alternative media side. And, you know, real hope, there's plenty of, and we don't need the false hope. So, you know, let's really pay attention to this. Okay, here's another one, which this one is okay because it involves our friend over at the Black Vault, John Greenwald, and he's done incredible work assembling what the agencies will allow to come out. However, the way that it's being portrayed in the media is that, like this article, CIA releases entire collection of UFO-related documents to truth-seeking website. Well, it's true and not true, because now everyone thinks, hey, the CIA just released a bunch of files, and that's all the goodness. But what happened was he's been trying to get them to give him files for years. And so they finally said, you have everything that we have to give. So he's had the file. I mean, those files have been there. Some of them are 2, 3, 4 years old, and he does a great job with them. What he did is he made what they gave him searchable. That's what this story is. So again, the media loves the UFO story now. They're in love with it. And but it's a UFO threat story, and it's the CIA is always in the center of it. You notice that? TTSA, over 100 years of CIA experience on the executive board. What's that all about? Do you really need 100 years of CIA experience to drive forward a UFO narrative? Why didn't all the UFO researchers push back and say, this is a CIA-run operation? Instead, they were like, I can't wait to get into that CIA huddle and be on the unidentified TV show, which landed in 49th place. So, you know, it's weird the way that things backfire, but we need to understand that the UFO file, it's not something to be taken off of the important deep state radar. When we discuss the deep state, the UFO technology, the X technology related to the UFO file, those things are a key part of what they're battling over. So we need to understand that instead of this kind of frou-frou version that we get from the mainstream media about, ooh, you know, the CIA is giving us file. You know, I mean, that's just the most superficial, blasé level. And, you know, it's a lot of people have always been surprised over the last 2 years and said, wow, you know, the newspapers are talking, the media is talking and about UFOs, and isn't this great? And, you know, it's interesting because they've blocked that information for so long. But now that they have the threat thing down, and now that they have ops that they've tried, like the COVID op, and they've kind of, while you've been in your house during lockdown and stuff, pushed these UFO stories at you, they're trying to make it so that when they pull the UFO op out, it'll be just, you know, stay in your home and we'll deal with the alien overlords kind of thing. That is coming. There's no mistake. I know how the deep state operates with media trends, and they're getting closer and closer to bringing that aspect of it out. And when it does, don't believe them at all. That's all I can tell you. There's plenty of independent, this is what we're learning, which is it is the independent aspects, whether it's how to run our communities or information about UFOs. That's the stuff that we need to build up and become a knowledge base for each other and sharing this information. This idea of government disclosure, or government being in charge of our medical lives, or government mandating vaccines, you know, they're going to go for it. They're going to try to mandate this vaccine. And the vaccine is a DNA changer. And, you know, there's no way that there are hundreds of millions of people who just will not do that. So they're going to try to create the type of peer pressure that, just like they're trying to create the type of peer pressure around the domestic terrorism initiative. Those are all control games, and the thing that exposes them is like when they do operations where they overdo it, like when they shut down President Trump's Twitter account. It's too much. It's a bridge too far. It makes them look like the aggressor. They play the victim best, and then they were like, as victims, we have to enact all these things to make sure all these terrible bad people never do these bad things again. Even though most of the legislation is written by the Central Intelligence Agency, which has killed hundreds of thousands of people with no trial, you know, just in their operations as part of their thing. They're not the types of people to write to add in and include extra policing powers, shall we say. They are the problem over and over again. And how do you create the type of resistance to organizations like that? You can do it bureaucratically. As a matter of fact, it's been demonstrated in the 70s and 80s that they were able to push back and reveal those organizations and to blunt their influence, but they regroup over and over again and they become more powerful because in the case of the CIA, when they were really getting grilled in the late 70s for a lot of the things that they were doing on assassinations and overthrowing other countries, they literally, some of their main people went offshore when they were fired, and they created the Safari Club, which is something we've tried to cover on this program and is well covered in the work of Professor Scott. And the Safari Club was a group that included all the intelligence heads of all these different countries from France, Morocco, and others, and all the munitions dealers. So there was this incredible rapport because they had those connections and they just waited it out. They waited the storm out and they all came back in the 80s and 90s with the Contra Wars and the crack epidemic and all the rest. So we need to understand from their perspective where they're coming from. They need to get, they've been, how long have they been after Trump? Since January 20th, 2016, right? And even before he got in, they were trying to present this information. And in that interim period after he was elected, they really went into overdrive. So guys like Brennan, who was the CIA director, Drone King under Obama, he's somebody that I want us to really keep a focus on in terms of his activities in public, because he's a big one around pushing the UFO file. And considering his efforts to get Trump removed through the 25th Amendment after supposedly Biden had won the election, these are the things that we need to watch because they're so revealing for us as we go deeper and I'll start to understand the struggle in the deep state side between Trump forces, the deep state CIA forces, the public and populism, which they hate of any stripe, left or right, they cannot stand it. And because it shows that the public pressure might overwhelm them to do something. And, they've tried to, when populism pops up at periods in time, they always try to hang a violence label on them. Oh, they're violent agitators. And this is what they're trying to do in relation to the deep event on January 6th. They're trying to create a thing about these hundreds of millions of Trump supporters and saying, well, that's a violent thing. When, of course, you've had hundreds and thousands of rallies with these groups, and they've never done anything violent at all. That's what it's really about. And regardless, again, of what stripe you fall on the political spectrum, it's ridiculous to, because remember, the domestic terrorism rules and the things that they're planning to put in place through the Biden administration, by the way, the people who are crafting that stuff are the same people who crafted the terrorist rules for Bush. Keep that in mind if you're on the left and you're cheering that. They will use that against people on the left. And they've already, the people who are sounding the alarm, like Chris Hedges, like Naomi Wolf, like Glenn Greenwald, they're ringing the bell loud for their compadres on the left to wake up and see this for what it is. So when that legislation hits, it's very important for us across the board, right and left, to resist it and to have the people who represent us in Congress and in the Senate to resist it as well, and to create one hell of a firestorm in reporting on it so that people know what it is and that it does not get through the way the Patriot Act got through, because the Patriot Act is how we got COG and the continuity of government and NORTHCOM running America. So this is the moment. And by the way, every year, the president, whoever he is, Trump, Obama, they have to sign the 9/11 emergency with the NDAA. So it keeps us under the same state of emergency. That state of emergency never got lifted. There was a state of emergency during the Korean War, and it got lifted when they were investigating Watergate, and they were like, oh, For 22 years, we've been under that state of emergency. Well, it allows the government to go outside of the normal channels to do things, which is why it's so important that that get lifted and that we're not living under this, because what they're moving in with the domestic terrorism bill is complete unchecked power locked in with that surveillance state to basically eliminate their enemies and to silence their enemies, I would say, eliminate their voice more than anything else. And that represents a great danger to any constitutional republic and any democracy, a loving country. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show, and I'm just going to wrap up on a couple of things around this leftist activist who was among those arrested in this very unusual past, which I find quite fascinating. It's great to have everyone here. It's been a fantastic ride on this. We are coming back on Friday with a special report. We may do a special report also after the inauguration. And we have Groovy Bean running the show out there, and Miss J.G. Young, fantastic. In the ideas room, I know there's going to be lots of good questions for our next show. We don't have Miss Olivia, the lovely Olivia, tonight, but we will when we come back. Okay, also a reminder to go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for our free newsletter to make sure that we stay in touch, because that's very crucial at this juncture because of the amount of censorship that we're seeing, which is beyond anything I think we could have imagined, even though we've seen signs of it. My God, you know, when they were unplugging people left and right there and just shutting the president down, really hard to wrap your head around that. The president of the United States and these little peon social media companies with all this power. But you know, when it comes right down to it, not a lot of sense, because that was such an obvious move that they had to go into retraction mode. And then when this thing came up with Uganda saying, hey, we're not going to deal with you guys, you censor content, then they have to come forward and say, we're the ones, we're the free internet, we believe in free speech. And they just proved that they didn't, so no one believes it, except for some really wacky neoliberals. All right, a couple of quick things. I want to point this out. You know, I did extensive reporting around National Security Action Memorandum 57. This is key, I think, for us to understand, which is the only thing that it does, and that President Kennedy left it on the books to do and wasn't able to achieve its ratification at the time, but it is an active executive order, is it splits the CIA, it removes them from the responsibility of paramilitary operations. It reduces their role to a support role. So the Pentagon does the thing and they support. No more drones, aircraft, you know, no more going in and doing unauthorized activities and droning whoever you don't like and this type of activity. So it was so powerful and it sat there. When it was activated on November 18th through the acting defense secretary, Miller, who gave a kind of an unusual rambling press conference today, saying that he was happy to leave the job. And I can only imagine the type of pressure he came under on January 5th when the NSAM was activated. But we have to remember that Trump, in doing this after the election and in firing the acting, not the acting defense secretary, the defense secretary, Esper, were major pieces that we don't want to miss in this whole shuffle. The fact that Esper was the one who appointed Van Herk to be the NORTHCOM commander comes into play for me when I look at that, because it seems to me that he thought the continuity of government people were trying to, Trump that is, were trying to replace him during the COVID scare. So there were a lot of activities. We've never seen a president do the things that Trump did in the 2 months following the election, including the challenge to the election. Now, it's interesting, a lot of things, there's a story breaking out of Italy about these hackers that Leonardo, that worked for this military industrial complex outfit called Leonardo Aerospace. And they got caught doing something else, but it was learned that they were active in trying to hack into our elections. And there are some of those hackers who have given affidavits saying that they were successful in doing that. So it's a very powerful piece of information on the surface that is available as evidence. That is, we don't have to guess at it. It doesn't have to be, you know, one of these wild things that you hear about. We've been hearing a lot of kind of nonsense out of certain circles about how everything is under control and, you know, all this type of thing. But this, in a couple of different cases, we have very solid evidence that we can point to. And through the work of people like Sidney Powell, who really ends up looking incredibly heroic in her battle to keep the election from just sliding through the fingers of history without a real audit of what had happened. And the cases that she brought forward going after Dominion, and the fact that Dominion tried to sue her for $1.3 billion, how much of a cage did you rattle in order for this company, this multi-billion dollar company, to come after you because their software can fix elections? Well, so she's really someone who brought forward something that the public needed to see and creates a type of transparency. And all the people who are around the election who looked into it honestly said, we need to go back to paper ballots because the computerized aspect of the elections are too easy to flip. So what you need, and it's very funny because there was a governor down in Georgia who basically let Trump down because he didn't allow there to be signature verification involved with mail-in ballots, which is very important. Now he's asking for his own election that's coming up. He wants to make sure there's photo ID for mail-in ballots. Well, that's quite a different thing. So you can see as soon as you get out of the thing of where they were told, don't help Trump, whatever you do with his fight on voter fraud, then now they realize they're screwed for their own stuff and they need to go forward and to enact all the things that Trump was mentioning. It's like, hey, this is very unusual and we need to look into it. And if this was a normal situation politically, what would have happened is very simple. It would have been a disputed election. You would have had a group on one side that would have made their findings clear to a Senate panel. And the Senate panel would have weighed what happened and the irregularities. Now, there was a Senate hearing on voting irregularities, so it made it to that level. So the thing with the Capitol event and the deep event that occurred there is that it's meant to displace the entire conversation, just like 9/11. Before 9/11, there were all these things where they were looking into, you know, there were a lot of things that the deep state wanted to do that they were being hamstrung by. So they were able to blow away any conversation of any opposition to the government or any looking into the CIA or anything by saying the CIA and Homeland Security will protect you. They created Homeland Security during 9/11. We never had that as an organization before. But it's very unusual because Homeland Security has 250,000 employees now. That's kind of a large bureaucracy. How did that happen? Well, they created this thing and then it became bigger and bigger and bigger with more and more police powers. And, you know, at a certain point, there was all these stories about flea markets being disrupted. And that's what Homeland Security was up to. This was the level. They were just, you know, creating their own strange ops for God knows what. So that's what happens when a police state gets out of control. And you have to go back to the example of East Germany and the Stasi state, which kept a profile of every citizen in East Germany and would manipulate them, you know, and kept control files on them. So we're very close to falling into that with this, you know, first, what I want to call the hacked election. You don't need to call it stolen, it's hacked. And, you know, so you've got the hacked election, you have the aftermath, and now you have the, we have to get rid of these populists no matter what, and populism, and people thinking that they can do things on their own. The problem is what Trump proved is that the populist movement is gigantic. And you know, if they say that Biden got 80 million votes, and if the votes are hacked, think of how many votes that Trump actually got. So he probably got somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 million votes. Those are people who are actively voting I'm not even talking about people who, you know, are interested and supportive of it, but actual voters. So in America, you know, how are you going to just get rid of 100 million people and shut them up? Well, you know, you can try to repress them through the COVID lockdown stuff. You can try to identify them the way the Stasi did. And then the next thing that you can do is you can try to enact the type of legislation under democratic control of domestic terrorism and just aim it squarely at the populace, which is exactly what the World Economic Forum Davos types want you to do. And it's basically they're the heirs to the Bilderberg group type of control, which is that very behind the scenes stuff. Now, one of the things that they did, they left some fingerprints during the incident at the Capitol. And so we have this figure, John Sullivan, but he's a leftist. So what was he doing there? He was in the Capitol and he was instigating inside the Capitol for this riot. Why would you get a leftist BLM guy, just like there were some Antifa people mixed in with the Trump people? How would it happen? Why would they be there? Well, it's interesting. If you go into Sullivan's history, he's learned a lot about how to be an agent provocateur, and he left instructions about how they needed to dress like MAGA to get in on this stuff and create disruption. So they were able to do that. But this isn't somebody or some right-wing blog's fantasy. This guy is in custody and was arrested by the FBI. Far-left agitator John Sullivan posed as a cameraman at Capitol riot to stir up violence. Let's burn this S down. So I'm not saying he's solely responsible for everything that happened there, which has been dramatically pulled out of proportion by the media, but his role, which they're trying to keep on the down low, is very important because it shows the presence of different groups trying to create this environment. And, you know, if you understand anything about deep state operations and agent provocateurs, you have to go back to Martin Luther King and the peaceful protest that he would hold. And they always try to plant these people who would break windows and do things in order to discredit his movement. So people would think, oh, those people aren't interested in peace. They're just coming here to riot. So that's a very different thing. It took Martin Luther King, you know, over a decade of marches and things like that to get the results that he got before they assassinated him. So, you know, we need to keep that in mind when we hear stories coming out about this. And, you know, there were some deaths. There was a young protester there who was a woman in the military who had been in the Air Force, and she was killed by Capitol Security. But who told Capitol Security to stand down that created the ability for those people to even be in there? Who did the security stripping? These types of things. You know, when you have a million people coming to town, you're usually prepared for these things. So we need to ask those real questions, whether you're on the left or the right. And instead of people who are on the left celebrating and saying like, ha ha, Trump is a fascist and we caught him. And, you know, now we get our guy in. Instead, they should be looking long down that domestic terrorism legislation because it's pointed right at them. And that's the tricky thing with right and left. When they get us off on different sides, we're not seeing it who's doing all these things. So I would say that's the really crucial piece. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. We're just about to wrap up here on Friday night. And we're hoping to come back to you next Friday with the full X Series 100 episode, part one of three. I want to make sure that you go to the Dark Journalist website, sign up for our free newsletter, and keep us in touch while they are doing all this insane, and I mean some really insane censorship, and just pulling people off left and right who don't agree with their positions. I want to say one other thing about Sullivan, and I've been looking into his past, so expect more on him. But here he is on CNN, and they allowed him to pose as, you know, an independent reporter who just had kind of stumbled into the situation and didn't know what was going on. Thank God video came out later showing him in his instigator role, and then we got a real thing of his background. But, you know, there's CNN directly participating in the And, you know, they're a real blot on the idea of journalism. And we've seen that over and over again, that these people are there to press an agenda because they're getting paid to do it. And, you know, we had an incredible incident with Jake Tapper's, this journalist, in quotes, that was on CNN, and he was talking about a congressman. And the congressman, in fact, had two legs amputated because he'd been in the Iraq War. And here was this, like, Jake Tapper, just nothing person, you know, real bottom of the barrel. And he's sitting there going, you know, and he actually says, well, you know, he's a double amputee and he lost his legs, but I guess he forgot what, you know, American liberty was all about. And you just look at him and you just think, you know, he's just this weird, like, weasel, but he has a big microphone, and those globalist forces have put that big microphone in front of him. He wouldn't know what to do, you know, facing a real war situation like the congressman he was going after. And he was just criticizing the congressman because the congressman was saying, hey, you know, we need to look into what's really going on here. So this is how they do it. And they surround themselves with some of the worst people, unfortunately. And they have the ability, CNN, New York Times, and all the rest of it, to be incredibly helpful to humanity because, you know, they have the education, all the rest. But instead, what we get is they create the official version of events and other people just pull their strings. So that's not journalism, those things that we see out there. And, you know, as we can see with Cooper interviewing this guy Sullivan, not asking him any important questions, you know, they're just there to move a narrative along. But when we go a little bit deeper, we find out Sullivan is part of BLM and is somebody that these types of deep state operators would use to create more chaos and mayhem, because certainly there's a lot of that going around. Okay. One other thing I want to mention, and I know it's disturbing, which is that there was a death of an officer at the Capitol, but the Capitol officer's family has a different version about it. They said he had a pre-existing health condition and they don't want the media to politicize his death as evidence begins to point an underlying condition. That's from his family. They don't want CNN out there saying, hey, you know, like all the deep event at the Capitol caused this guy's death, because the New York Times really gets off on that. But the family is saying, no, he had a pre-existing medical condition. He died 4 days later and, you know, don't mix those two up. So, I think that's important, and if they put the message out, it's enough for me to relay it here. Okay, a couple of quick things. A press release came out today, and it was a number of people were getting together to kind of create a different social media thing. And oddly enough, it was on Project X. I think that's what they're calling it, Project X. And I always think the X steganography is very thick on these things. But I saw Bill Binney was involved with it, so maybe something good will come out of that after all. I think what's important for us to kind of bring this whole report together is to look at the fact that what they've basically done in since the election is create all the circumstances that they need to get the domestic terror bill going. The domestic terror bill increases the policing powers of the FBI and the NSA and others in order to create basically a Stasi-style state. In America, I'm sure they will export this to other countries as well. We saw the UK is, you know, in the middle of all these lockdowns and just under that incredible control system of Boris Johnson. And we've also seen incredible honest reporting on the coronavirus, and that is all on the independent side, and it's people like Naomi Wolf and others, Alex Berenson, ex-New York Times. These people, they've gone in there, they've checked out the facts, and they don't like what the type of answers and responses that they've been getting. So for me, what's going on there is, you know, they've been creating the situation where to keep us in a lockdown, to keep us not talking to each other, to exaggerate the threat so that they stay in charge. they've been creating the situation around the vaccine, and they've been repressing the results, pretending, oh, you know, the side effects are just what everybody gets with the vaccine. Well, it's not true. And it's proving to be dangerous for some people. That's just a matter of fact. So, you know, you can get thrown off these types of channels for saying it, but the only thing I'm interested in is getting the information out to you. And regardless of whether or not I had this channel, I would be reporting these things for you. But what I do think is important is to wrap our heads around the fact that the numbers over and over again are saying what they're playing up is a case-demic, and that they're getting into this whole thing about, oh, the numbers are going up, the numbers are going up. It's the way they're counting things. One of the things Naomi Wolf did in calling out the New York Times was she said, you know, where are you getting this data from? Where are you getting this data from? She investigated it and really pushed them hard for it. And finally, she found out that they were asking people to contribute information, no official count. So if somebody like a pharmaceutical company wanted to exaggerate it in order to sell what? More vaccines to the government or whatever, they could easily just go in there and monkey with it. So they're just accepting. This is a news organization, a major news organization, just accepting voluntary information with no oversight to create a number scare around all this. And now they have the variant. Here comes COVID part two, right? The sequel, it's even worse. This time Godzilla is in there. So, you know, this is how they're going to play it. And they get more and more control, and, you know, they get what they want, which for some reason they want every citizen to have this vaccine, which is DNA altering. So they need to be answering those questions. And there are ways to compel them through the Senate, through the organizations, by public outcry. And those are the types of things that we need to be doing, because as we know, the vaccine makers are exempt from lawsuits as the result of a bill signed in 1986 under the Reagan administration. And what they did essentially is they held a gun to their head and said, you know what, if you don't stop us from getting sued, because they were getting sued, this is the pharmaceutical industry as a whole, they went to the American government through their senators and said, look, we're just going to stop making vaccines because we're getting sued too much. It's not profitable. You'll have to do it on your own. So the government buckled and said, here, we'll write some legislation that says you can't get sued if anything goes wrong. I kid you not. That bill is from 1986. Look it up. The other strange thing that happened was in 1997, we became one of only two countries, the other one being Germany, where you could commercially advertise pharmaceuticals for depression and everything else. It was not allowed before that. And so we've seen the use of these things and the incredible profits by that pharma cartel are at such a level that we're looking at, you know, them achieving a level of dominance. And now they're going to use that dominance through our public health life to control the citizens on the ground and the things they can say, the things they can't say, to the point where, you know, think of the difference between us, me here, and the president of the United States. So the president has all these powers, he has all these responsibilities to the world and in our system of government and in history and everything else. And they just censored the president of the United States. So it's already, you know, their attempts of our, I mean, they're already stepping back for sure, but they've already exposed where they're coming from. And that's a dangerous line that's been crossed. It got crossed at multiple junctures, but particularly in 2020. And now they're moving in the regime. And, you know, this regime, I want to say this when it comes to, and that's our hero, Sidney Powell, who brought many of these things to light. One of the things that happened, of course, there's Klaus Schwab. I did something very interesting with Schwab, which is I realized that his clothing made me think of, I put together this meme because I was thinking, you know, everyone's getting into that Biden sniffing hair meme, but I wonder if I can get him with arm on. Telling it like it is. But a lot of people, you know, we do a lot of shows on Ahriman and the Steiner work and Anthroposophy. And it is fascinating. And I want you to know there's many of these coming up, but for the ones we've done, I highly recommend them to many of our new followers who aren't familiar with Steiner's great work, because Anthroposophy identified this period that we're in and talked very much about Ahriman as a kind of a spirit of technology that was coming through, and how, from a cosmological level, philosophical level, humanity had to be aware of this in order to combat it. Steiner's work holds up incredibly well through all of these different things. And strangely, when we read about Rudolf Steiner, who, was not just a mystic, was an incredibly accomplished scholar and author, and the founder of Anthroposophy, his work reads like almost like a blow-by-blow of what we're seeing here in the 21st century, to such a level that I highly recommend, if you have looked at esoteric literature but you haven't really dived into it, and if you're more even on the political side, look into Steiner's work and what he was saying about this period, because he opened up a lot around 1919, 1920 about what would happen in 100 years, 2020, 2021, this period that we're in, and talking about it as the possibility, the doorway, like a fork in the road, and how there were opportunities there around World War I for the kind of the countries to get together spiritually and move on in a more progressive fashion. Instead, we got World War I, and the cause of the mystery schools had failed because they were trying to bring this information forward. But there he was saying, hey, we're going to get another shot at it in 100 years. So Steiner's work, highly informative and also very interesting from the perspective of there is a spirit to the technology, and we need to understand what that is and what transhumanism is trying to do. So how we could sum things up right now is that there's a transhumanist movement which is trying to transition from being human to being machine. And they are at war with kind of populist humanity who want nothing to do with that and want to go forward in a natural evolutionary way. So the clash that we see going on with the transhumanists right now is that they are very much in charge of our technology, the economic system, psychology, education, so they've arrived at a position, and we need to acknowledge who they are, what they believe in, and what their goals are if we're going to be able to counteract them properly. So there are keys there in the mystery schools, in the work of Rudolf Steiner, in Theosophy, and other things that we cover in this program, to give you an idea of the place that we're moving into, and the tools that are left for us by some of these people who are trying to move the culture forward and understood that we were going to come face to face with the kind of soulless tyranny of transhumanism, which is what we're up against now. So what I can say is, it's almost on a daily basis this is playing out. But I can tell you, in the latest chapter of the Battle of Humanity against transhumanism, we really saw them overreach in shutting down what is, the most powerful person in the world, and his reach for national security and everything else was a very dangerous thing to do. And you're going to see them walking it back more, but they're going to try to portray themselves again as saviors with this administration. They're going to say, we're going to save you from bad people. Here's the domestic terrorism bill. It includes extra policing powers for us. Let us move it through. Those are the things that I think we can unanimously stand up against, either in social media, in reporting, in conversations with people, in our voting, in talking to senators, and writing letters to congressmen, whatever it is. That is not something that we're signing on to. The domestic terror thing, we already had the disastrous decade of terrorism under Bush and followed up on by Obama, who, bombed seven countries, including Libya, for basically no reason. And now it's still a failed state. But, Hillary Clinton was in charge of that one. But of course, right by his side was Joe Biden, and all those people who thought, hey, Biden's here and he's going to be progressive or whatever, they're horrified when they see the people that he's picking for this administration, because he is in fact, you know, going back to all of the neocons and hawks that got us into all those terrible standoffs in the Obama situation coming out of the Bush. And some of them come directly out of the war on terror. As a matter of fact, the woman, the congressman who was helping him to lay out his priorities for domestic terrorism, she had been somebody who had given us the Iraq War assessment, you know, saying they had WMD and all that magic. So, you know, we need to see this next chapter that we're going into is really, I would say that we're real opposition at this point, and we need to, that can really inspire us in a lot of ways, because, you know, there's a lot of things about the Trump administration going into a second administration, and there are, you know, there were a lot of hopes for what could happen with it. But Trump, if Biden gets his administration in on the 20th, then Trump stands to be an incredible opposition, you know, just a real block on things that they need to do, because he still commands a tremendous voter base, which after all, if you really look at the election, won dramatically in 2020. And this is the kind of the big secret, which is they pushed in this very unpopular figure that wouldn't have won in any other circumstances. So that's what they're trying to stick us with, and we'll see how all that goes. But I will say this, regardless of that administration, the Biden administration, if it's there, the incredible pushback that is available politically, you know, and from all kinds of peaceful ways to push back against a surveillance state. And we have the ability to do that. And we need to remember that. So if anybody is disheartened by the way that things have played out here with the deep event and with the stolen election and everything else, a hacked election, I can definitely appreciate it. But I will say this, that, you know, the thing that needs to be the focus as soon as that administration, and, you know, I want to say this too about the Senate, it's actually 50-50. They're trying to pretend that there was this big Democratic wave. The Democrats lost 14 seats in the House. And so they're within 10 seats with the Republicans. You know, now a lot of Democrats and Republicans don't act any differently, so that's not exactly encouraging, but I'm saying it's really tight. You know, so when you're looking at the Senate and it's 50-50, they have a tie-breaking vote, and it's Kamala Harris as VP, just like Mike Pence would be the head of the Senate. He's the tie-breaking vote if they got 50-50. So, you know, that's where government lays in America. So those people, you know, going forward with the domestic terrorism bill, when they go to push that, remember, all of the people who believe in democracy should not be voting for that bill. And one of the guys I want to identify is the senator from West Virginia. He's somebody who is not going to vote the party line for the Democrats. So they might have some problems unless they're able to swing Mitt Romney to their side. So we could be looking at a lot of these types of things. But I do want us to keep in mind that it's very important, one, that we demand the real numbers in relation to the COVID-19 situation, that we throw all that off. And they seem to know that aspects of this can't be pulled off anymore, like with the comments that Cuomo made about restaurants and all the rest. You have some psychos like Gretchen Whitmer and Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, who are hanging on for dear life. But, you know, Gretchen got rewarded. She's the deputy. She's now deputy at the DNC. So she got rewarded for all that crazy lockdown stuff that she pulled, creating a panic and stopping people from, you know, going about their regular lives, just like they're doing it through Europe. But, you know, they have incredible uprisings in places like Denmark. And, you know, we're looking at situations where people are seeing that they're under this incredible, you know, just unbelievable restrictive lifestyles that are trying to be laid on them. So what we're looking at is that pushback for protest is throughout every country. You know, you see it heavily in France. And so the controllers looking back are saying, aha, what we need to do, we're very unpopular. And what we need to do is get rid of this populism and get rid of these uprisings. What do we need to do? We need a global domestic terrorism bill. America can be the model for it. And we use all our surveillance powers to repress it. So that's just where they're coming from. I mean, and it's so obvious. So I think we need to take advantage of it when they overreach to really point it out. So, like we saw with Twitter, that was a really bad overreach, shutting down the president and 70,000 other accounts. So they really look like they're not interested in free speech. That's good. They revealed themselves. It's very important. It's dangerous what they did. And they don't know how to walk it back. Even when they walk it back, as I said, they adopt very psychotic language. So we have to remember these types, who were the same ones who spied on President Trump to try to get him out of office before he got in there, Comey, Clapper, and Brennan. We've had these people around as representatives, and in situations like with the Kennedy assassination, they've been getting rid of people who are in their way for over 60 years. And so for them to have pulled off all these hijinks around Trump, we have to say they were really ready for it, and they had the experience to do it, and this is the way that they went to do it. So I think our best move is over the period of time between now and the 2022 election is to get as many people into the Senate and the Congress who believe in real liberty and who believe in, who would never go along with the surveillance state and the domestic powers that they're trying to increase. So the people like Rand Paul that are out there, and there's a lot of them, actually. Thomas Massie is another one. They don't believe in those types of surveillance powers being extended. And I think that regardless of anything else that they're doing, the domestic terrorism bill has to be our focus in terms of resisting that kind of police Stasi state that they're trying to lay down on us. And we're going to get into this more as we look back, of course, at President Trump's presidency. We're going to see a lot of things that he did. From the wall, which acknowledged that we had a border and needed to keep people out of the country, and criminals from coming in, or drug runners and all the rest. So Trump, certainly, there's a number of initiatives that he did that were very successful. And of course, they were so successful that they really ticked the deep state, the kind of Bush, Clinton, Obama type deep state off tremendously. And they've been reeling ever since, figuring out how to get rid of this guy. But I think the pushback against China, the America First policy, the Fortress America policy, and also keeping out of foreign wars, which no president since Carter has been able to do. Think about that. That's a long time. Think about Jimmy Carter. If you have to go back, that's some 40 years ago. So, when we look at it that way, we certainly can see that Trump had great successes. He brought the number of troop levels down in Iraq and Afghanistan to 2,500, which is a huge improvement. And think about people's lives. It makes such a great difference. So, I think there are a lot of things that we can say in relation to President Trump's tenure. And I feel that these next 5 days are going to be loaded with incredibly important things that he can do, like the JFK assassination records reveal. That's at his fingertips to do, and it would embarrass the CIA greatly, which is important for accountability. And it would also open up a history dramatically. I think it's a very important thing for him to do. I think the UFO file information that he's been privy to probably most of his life because of his uncle, that's something that's also within his ability to release. And of course, the pardoning of Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, I think, would really complete this incredible first term that President Trump had. He wasn't perfect, but I think there's a lot of things there that he was able to do and that he was able to upset the system. And remember that first terms, it's like Kennedy, he had 3 years and he got so much done. And it's usually second terms where presidents screw up. And let's remember in President Reagan's second term, it was, this incredible thing that he had going on with Iran-Contra, and it almost took his presidency out. Of course, Nixon and Watergate. Clinton had his whole impeachment scandal, and he was impeached. Well, now Trump was impeached twice. It was only by the House. And by the way, oh, that's the other thing I forgot to mention, which is there's not going to be any impeachment trial in the Senate. I don't know why. I mean, I guess the newspapers just think we're all stupid or something. Trump gets out of office under their clock now, January 20th. The Senate can't pick up a trial until January 21st. So there's not going to be any trial, because then they'd have to basically be trying Mr. Trump, not President Trump, as we've seen a lot of legal experts coming forward and saying. They wouldn't be able to impeach him from what? Being a citizen? It's ridiculous. It doesn't exist. So they're going through weird motions about this, talking about it, and it was just a show sham for Nancy Pelosi to do this. And that also looked unhinged. This is part of the other side's unraveling, which is, hey, let's do this impeachment thing. You know, it's always to keep the pressure on Trump just in case he decides to declassify things. So they thought, even at this level, this is what we're going to do. I think that they are afraid of Trump, but not because he was authoritarian. I think they're afraid of him because he's an equal player. And he's somebody on their level. He knows a lot about the UFO file. He knows about the advanced technology. And he is somebody who understands the world situation, because he had Nixon as a friend for a decade, which is why over and over again, I pointed out that relationship. And, you know, we're lucky, because eventually it came out. It came out during the election. So it's important for me. You know, there are a lot of people who do research and present things online, and we've seen them go really overboard. But, you know, it's important to me that when I present things to you, that you have that confidence that there's the research is behind it. And then when it comes true, it's good, because we can both look each other in the eye and say, all that research and stuff that we were on, now the regular world can take a piece of that too. And that's how it is with the ex-steganography and the UFO file, and how those things are inextricably sort of matched up with the national security state. So this is the situation that we find ourselves in. And it's one heck of a situation. But I think as far as it goes in moving forward, we have a lot to do politically, including to get the voting process to be transparent. And I think there should be a national movement about paper ballots and just getting rid of the Dominion machines completely. I think Sidney Powell has done an incredible job of showing us the dangers. And those are the CIA's favorite tools, you know, the vote flipping computers. They've used them all over the world. So there's a lot, I think, that we can do here in coming forward, and we need to do it. We need to have that trust in each other to get through, you know, the kind of oppressive situation of the administration that they are hoisting upon us. And, you know, I have to say that I think that people are more aware than ever politically, and so that we've done a great job collectively in the people in the ideas room and on this program, and in certain aspects of alternative media, of just letting people into this larger process and a deeper thought process. And if we can give them a reasonable place to work from, then we can all work together on that, toward that brighter future. And that's what I think that we're doing. So I want to thank everyone for joining me tonight. What an outstanding crowd. I wasn't able to take questions, but we will be doing questions next Friday with Miss Olivia. And we're going to have some very special shows and guests coming up for you for the rest of January. And, of course, we'll all be, you know, kind of seeing the great transition that's coming up here and watching things closely. I want everyone in this audience to watch out for the domestic terrorism bill. That's going to be our focus politically, but we're going to be doing a lot of shows based around the mystery schools, because we haven't been able to get to them with all this political hubbub going on, but we have some fantastic material for you coming up in the X series, and we're going to be doing that together. I'll do a couple of shout outs here. Scarlet Fire, it's great to see you. Kat Goida, Carolyn, it's good to see you. Katie Cat, So thank you, Daniel, and Groovy Bean for the mod. Yeah, Groovy Bean. Excellent. Thank you, Yvonne. Just fantastic. We appreciate it. And Worldwide Ghosts. Fantastic. Great name. I like that one. The job, it's great to see you out there. A cult fan, the man, the myth, of course. Joseph Fabre, Thomas Tyson, Tessa, Golden Girl. We got them all in the ideas room tonight. The ideas room is going to be incredibly valuable under the 2021 umbrella with all the challenges that we have, because you have some great thinkers in there. Darth Brooks, there's another one. I like that one. Melissa Crimson and Irie A. Of course, Gigi Young was out there tonight. Incredible information and videos that Gigi's been putting out lately. All of her stuff is good, but the videos lately have just been off the charts. And I saw that Catherine Austin Fitz retweeted Gigi Young yesterday. Congratulations, Gigi. That's a good one. And that's a fantastic video that you made about breakaway civilizations. Diana Beauregard, Daniel Browning, Catherine Harris. Fantastic crowd in here tonight. Excellent. Josh, Eric DeMann. Fantastic. Yes, Mark Edmond, Carl Jung. Just a great group. We will see you all next Friday. And of course, we might have, because they have all this government transition things going on, we may have some special reports for you, or just jump on and give you a big heads up about what's going on. Catherine Harris, great to see you. Hillary, I like that one. Great name. But we will see you all on next Friday, and it'll be X Series 100, which we've been really trying to get that to you with all the craziness that's been going on. Bo Krills, sir, it's great to see you. And thank you so much for joining us. And Sarabella, great. I know Kate was out there tonight. It's great to see you. Scratch, Sarah J, Gummy Bears, Daniel Browning. Yeah, a great crew in the ideas room. Remember to go to the Dark Journals website and sign up for our newsletter. Keep us connected during this period of time. And we will see you all next week. And you know, it says end broadcast, but after all, it never really ends, as we know. Susan Lukowski, Johann Wolf. Get your popcorn. I like that, Jennifer Ann. Roosevelt Media, he's out there. Katie Cat. Just a great crew. All right, have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll see you soon.